God would give me some sign. If he would just speak to me once. Anything, one sentence, two words. If he would just cough.
Of course there's a God. We're made in his image.
You think I was made in God's image? Take a look at me. You think he wears glasses?
Not with those frames.
Despite humorists like Woody Allen, the question of God's existence is no laughing matter. From law to morality to our own eternal existence, everything crumbles with God out of the picture. Discover why this week on Just Thinking with author and apologist Ravi Zacharias. Welcome to Just Thinking. Yesterday, we began the first of a four-part presentation called Is Atheism Dead? Is God Alive? The message was presented to a packed house. Furthermore, the audience wasn't one that's known to be favorable to Ravi Zacharias' views on God and Christianity. Where was he? At the Harvard Veritas Forum. Yesterday, Ravi framed out the philosophy of atheism. Today, he digs into it further and looks at one of its major proponents, a man by the name of Friedrich Nietzsche.
So you've got the substructure here of theory, you've got the infrastructure here of arts, and you've got the superstructure of prescriptivism. Now, please listen to me. As I look at those three levels, it is possible to come to it from level one of theory and level two of the arts or existentially felt issues. You can come to both these subjects meaningfully and address the issue of atheism or theism. Prescriptivism ultimately is beyond debate because it'll be a purely subjective interaction of one idea against the other. Now, what I'm going to do tonight is come to this at a second level of felt need. I'm going to come to it more from the existential trauma because I firmly believe, ladies and gentlemen, in an issue such as this, it is very easy to get lost in words and ideas and climb higher and higher along the ladder of abstraction till at the end of what has been said, you're really not sure. It's like reading some of those great debates and saying, at the end of it, it all sounded good, but it was not for me. Let me therefore anchor it and deal with it from a level of the existential struggle and the questions you and I have to raise existentially on whether or not the question of God is a valid point, and if it is valid, how does it address my need? Now, let me give you two definitions here of what atheism is all about. One of them is by Etienne Bourne, and it's a very straightforward one. Atheism is the deliberate, definite, dogmatic denial of the existence of God. It is not satisfied with appropriate truth or relative truth, but claims to see the ins and outs of the game quite clearly, being the absolute denial of the absolute. Second one from the Encyclopedia of Philosophy, edited by Paul Edwards. An atheist is a person who maintains that there is no God, that is, that the sentence God exists expresses a false proposition. It is a person who rejects belief in God. So there is a categoric affirmation of the non-existence of a divine being, infinite, absolute, uncaused. Those two definitions at least get us to the starting point that that's where atheism really comes from, that the proposition God exists is a meaningless one. That's where Kai Nielsen would build his whole attack if you have read his debate with J.P. Moreland. But let me take those definitions now and try to anchor them in the existential rub. I happen to believe that when the last chapters of this century are written, and if we survive through the next periods of time or whatever, I believe we will find out that the philosopher who had the greatest impact in the 20th century was the man who lived between 1844 and then the 1900. The man I'm talking about is Friedrich Nietzsche. I think the more you study and the more you dig into the concepts of what motivated the Death of God movement in the middle part of the 20th century, what motivated Adolf Hitler and Mussolini and Stalin and so on, you'll find the writings of Nietzsche to be somewhere that had such an impact on these people and in our time. You have heard this parable, but let me grab its intensity for you as I read it for you, the parable, the madman from Nietzsche. Have you not heard of that madman who lit a lantern in the bright morning hours, ran to the marketplace and cried incessantly, I'm looking for God, I'm looking for God. As many of those who did not believe in God were standing together there, he excited considerable laughter. "Have you lost him then?" said one. "Did he lose his way like a child?" said another. "Or is he hiding? Is he afraid of us? Has he gone on a voyage or emigrated?" Thus they shouted and laughed him to scorn. But the madman sprang into their midst and pierced them with his glances. "Where is God?" he cried. "I'll tell you, we have killed him, you and I. We are all his murderers. But how have we done this? How were we able to drink up the sea? Who gave us a sponge to wipe away the entire horizon? What did we do when we unchained this earth from its sun? Whither is it moving now? Whither are we moving now? Away from all suns, maybe? Are we not continually and perpetually falling backwards, forwards, sidewards, and in all directions? Is there any up or down left? Are we not straying through an infinite nothing? Do we not feel the breath of empty space? Has it not become colder? Is not more and more night coming on us all the time? Must not lanterns have to be lit in the morning? Do we not hear anything yet of the noise of the grave diggers who are burying God? Do we not smell anything yet of God's decomposition? God's decomposed too, you know, and he's dead. God remains dead and we have killed him. Now, how shall we, the murderer of all murderers, compose ourselves? That which was holiest and mightiest of all that the world has yet possessed has bled to death under our knives. Who will wipe this blood from us? With what water could we purify ourselves? What festivals of atonement? What sacred games will we need to invent? Is not this the greatest of deeds, too great for us to handle? Must not we ourselves become God, simply to seem worthy of it? There has never been a greater deed, and whoever shall be born after us for the sake of this deed shall be a part of a higher history than all history hitherto. Here the madman fell silent and again regarded his listeners. They too were silent and they stared at him in astonishment. At last he threw his lantern to the ground and it broke and went out. "I come too early, maybe. My time has not yet come. This tremendous event is still on its way, still traveling and has not yet reached the ears of men. Lightning and thunder require time. The light of the stars require time. Deeds require time even after they are done before they can be seen and heard. This deed is still more distant from them than the distant stars, and yet they have done it themselves." It has been related further that on the same day that the madman entered diverse churches and there sang a requiem, Aeternum Deo, led out and quieted, he said to have retorted each time, "What are these churches now if they are not the tombs and the sepulchres of God? God is dead. We have killed him." The very energy with which he poses this issue is so powerful, and Nietzsche has to be credited with many things. One of them is the honesty of the consequences of what he had just expounded. Many philosophers are unwilling to go that far. We, I know, have heard it. Many of us have read about it. But in my travels, it happened a few years ago where for the first time I saw the remains of it. And as long as I live, I do not believe I will ever remain the same from the experience of having given some lectures at Warsaw and then driving out to Auschwitz to witness what had happened there over several decades ago. As you walk in on one of those doors, there is a sign from Hitler himself which says, "I want to raise a generation devoid of a conscience, imperious, relentless, and cruel." I want to raise a generation devoid of a conscience, imperious, relentless, and cruel. Hitler was influenced by Nietzsche. Not only that, he personally presented copies of Nietzsche's writings to Mussolini. And as I walked from room to room, it all seemed so distant to my experience, until a teenage girl who had to be carried out of the room, she was starting to sob and break down and had to be carried and left the room of her own, had expressed the emotions that we adults were just trying to keep bottled up, till there were just two people left in the room, a man standing by my side, a total stranger to me, and myself a stranger to him. As I looked at this room, all I could see was young boys and girls, boys who'd been castrated, and there were all kinds of electrodes in their brains, as Mengele had tried to do his genetic studies on twins, and the tragic portrayal of these young children coming in there, their little shoes, some of them, their toothbrushes, their suitcases, their small clothes. And as I walked out of there, emotion welling up within me, this man turned to me and said, "What brings you here?" He asked me what I did professionally, and I told him. I told him I dealt a lot with the philosophical issues of religion and so on. He said, "You've got a lot to think about here, haven't you?" I said, yes, sir. I said, what do you do for a living? He said, I'm a judge in the state of New York. I said, well, I think you've got the same. You've got a lot to think about, too. What is interesting is that just as Aristotle had influenced Alexander the Great in the unity and diversity search, Nietzsche had influenced Hitler in the search for the Superman, in the finding of a solution where the superior would dominate the inferior. And in Nietzsche's Thus Spake Zarathustra, you remember how he portrays it. Zarathustra comes down from the mountain to tell people that there is no other world to be feared, no heaven to be gained, no hell to be shunned, no such thing as moral right or wrong. And as he walked into the town where he was going to do his teaching, things started to happen to illustrate what he was saying. And here's this tightrope walker trying to make his way between two buildings. And while he's halfway through, this gaudily dressed, almost a buffoon type character comes to the middle and shoves this tightrope walker aside. And the man now lying bleeding to death on the sidewalk is being cradled by Zarathustra, telling him he doesn't need to be afraid. He will be buried. No heaven to be gained, no hell to be shunned. And the new Superman had taken over, the Superman who was going to be autonomous and define his own right and wrong. And that's why nearly 100 years later, the King Crimson Rock Group says, knowledge is a deadly friend when no one sets the rules.
Knowledge is a deadly friend when no one sets the rules. That's especially true when there's no God to look to as the ultimate rule giver. You've been listening to Just Thinking as Ravi Zacharias teaches a powerful message entitled, Is Atheism Dead? Is God Alive? Today's presentation was originally part of a series of messages delivered at the Harvard Veritas Forum. There, Ravi defended the gospel, challenged the philosophy of atheism, and answered questions from some of the best and brightest minds in our nation. We think you'll truly enjoy hearing the powerful interchanges that took place at the Harvard Veritas Forum. And we offer the complete album to you in its entirety. If you'd like to order a copy, you can call us at 1-800-448-6766 and ask for the Harvard Veritas Forum. That number again is 1-800-448-6766. For other audio resources, as well as books and free articles and downloads, visit us online at rzim.org. While you're there, we also invite you to sign up for our daily email, A Slice of Infinity. Again, our site is rzim.org. Just Thinking is a listener-supported radio presentation of Ravi Zacharias International Ministries. Finally, join us again tomorrow for part 3 of Is Atheism Dead? Is God Alive? Until then, keep thinking.